Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our awesome guest is Keith Perhack, the founder of Segmetrics, and we're going to talk about launch best practices. This episode is brought to you by Airtable. What would you make if you had tools designed for the way you like to create? Airtable gives you the freedom and structure to design a workflow that fits your product needs. This tool can handle any content you throw at it. Screenshots, long text notes, to-do lists, and so much more. Receive $50 in credit by signing up at airtable.com/UIbreakfast. Hey, Keith.
Hey, Jane. Thanks for having me on.
We are thrilled. Thank you so much for your time. Before we get started, tell us a bit more about yourself, how you ended up being a founder of an analytics tool.
I kind of fell into it, to be honest. So I've been, my background's mainly in development. And about 10 years ago, I guess, I came to a crossroads in my life and my business and what I was doing. And I realized that marketing is something that I'd always been interested in and I wanted to get into more. And the time was right, et cetera. So I started doing conversion rate optimization for launches and for evergreen funnels and for sales funnels and all this stuff. And I started working with a lot of the big names in the marketing space. So I worked with like Ramit Sethi at I Will Teach, Jim Quick at Quick Learning, Evan Pagan, just all these different marketers working on increasing their conversion. So whether that's increasing leads coming into their funnels or increasing the sales pages and that kind of stuff. And I was doing this and I really enjoyed it and it's great work. The one thing I didn't enjoy was having to get the numbers at the end, right? Because it's great to make a new web page or try out a new email or split test something. And it's really hard to then say, okay, what worked and what didn't, right? Because getting these platforms are really good for creating split tests and for marketing and all this stuff, but they're really bad at getting that data out. So being able to say, okay, where did my leads come from? What did they do? How? What made them buy? What made them more valuable? All this stuff were questions that my clients were asking me that I would take hours to get out of our marketing tools. And I was using Infusionsoft at the time. And honestly, it takes hours to get that data out. And I was working with an analytics partner at the time, and he was helping me pull all this data, and he was doing all this stuff. And he came to me one day and he said, Keith, I'm going to pull out the rest of my hair if I have to pull one more of these lead reports. There's got to be something we can do. And so I said, well, they have an API. Let's look. And about 4 hours later, we had the first version of Segmetrics, which was very simply being able to say, okay, I have all these leads from Facebook. Which of them converted? How much is a lead from Facebook worth? How much is a lead from Facebook who watches my webinar worth compared to someone who doesn't? And that was the first version, right? So that was, and that kind of turned into the snowball of, okay, we can get this lead data. What else can we get? Can we see how many people open an email and then do this and then do that? And when I'm running a launch, can I see in real time how effective all these parts of my launch are? And yeah, and that's just kind of how it steamrolled. And now I've been doing this for 3-4 years with Segmetrics now, and I love it.
Oh, with one of our previous guests, we talked about the fact that analytic tools have really over matured as a market. So there's a great place for new, simpler, and more straightforward analytics tools. And I can see you joining the forces.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting because I would say, I mean, we have a number of competitors in our niche, but really at the high end, you're competing against things like Google Analytics and Mixpanel and Kissmetrics and stuff like that. And the interesting thing is that things like Mixpanel are so powerful. They can track anything and you can pivot on any metric. The problem is you have to put that data in yourself, right? You have to make sure that every dollar that goes into Mixpanel is attributed correctly, has the right SKU number, is the right dollar amount, etc. It's really tough. I know people who make I know consultants who charge $50,000 to $100,000 to make sure that your mixed panel accounts are set up correctly, right? And a standard marketer just can't do that. They don't have the money, they don't have the resources, they don't have the know-how. So you have to have something that connects, that's turnkey, that connects to your CRM, that connects to your merchant, and lets you know to the penny exactly how much any person is worth.
So who exactly is your target audience for Segmetrics?
Really, it's anyone that is doing marketing for products online, whether that's physical products or info products are definitely a big one. Anyone who has that type of marketing flow and is looking to figure out where they can improve, where they are leaving money on the table. One of the biggest ones right now is people who are running Facebook ads, right? Because Facebook will tell you, oh, you had 100 people opt in from this ad, but they don't know if those people were already on your list. They don't know how much money those people were worth in the 7-day or 100-day or 300-day or in a year. How much is this ad worth over time, right? There's no way, because they're doing JavaScript, the same problem we were talking about earlier with Mixpanel, they're not connected into your CRM. They don't know anything about these people who are opting in on your list, right? So they're not reporting the real value of each of your ads. So this is something that's hugely important for people as more and more people start spending money on Facebook. I mean, most of our customers are spending $5,000, $20,000, $100,000 on ads a month. It's insane. And then for Facebook to be able to not tell you exactly how much you're making back from those ads is just mind-blowing.
Since we're going to talk about email launches and sequences, you're not sending any email yourself. You're just tapping into the CRM that does send it, but you collect the stats and present them, you know, in an edible way for people.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. We don't do any of the sending. I'm a big proponent of tools should do one thing and do one thing really well. So we let the senders do their stuff. We let the merchants do their stuff. All we do is we take all that data together and report on it in the best way possible.
So let's continue with the main topic, product launches. And by products, there can be a lot of things, but primarily things that are one-off, be it info products or anything that just has one sale in the end, right? Not recurring.
Right, right. Well, even within recurring, we can look at things like subscription plans or products where we're going to have an upsell afterwards. But you're right, not software SaaS, but more of a launch, like, you wouldn't probably use this to launch a new SaaS product, but you would definitely use this if you were launching a new book, maybe a community course or something like that.
And I think since we're not going to talk about SaaS, it's important to say that for launch strategy for a SaaS product is completely different. And most of the founders I know say that the best launch for a SaaS is a slow, organic, gradual launch, rolling launch that doesn't build the hype and let thousands of people in at once. That's like a killer thing for a SaaS. So.
Right, because you have to support all those people. Whereas with products, it's actually the opposite. A huge launch can bring in a lot of new people talking about something. It's like, remember when the finale of Lost came out and everyone was like, oh my God, the finale of Lost, and everyone's talking about it. And now because TV shows come out and they're streaming, you don't watch them at the same time, there's not as much hype about a single show or a single episode as much, right? Because it's not a shared experience as much anymore. And it's the same thing with launches. That with software, you don't want that extra support of 5,000, 1,000 people signing up at once. You want that to drip out. But with a launch, the support is going to be about the same because you're selling a single product.
The right question would be, I know you totally adhere to all the privacy guidelines and everything, but you do aggregate data in your tool and you do learn from the findings of that aggregate data that you can share the insights from.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Let's start with the basics. What would be the ideal launch structure? Like how, let's just start with that. You don't just announce a product to your list.
Right.
Like
that. Correct. Correct.
So what do you do instead with email?
What I am a huge proponent of with email marketing and with launch marketing especially is education over sales, right? And my general rule of thumb is for any email that you're sending out, 70% of your email should be about education, teaching people stuff, not salesy, and then about 30% should be sales. And where you see people start to flounder is when they start selling more than they start teaching, right? Because you start losing that trust. So what does this mean for a product launch? In my mind, the product launch should start about 2 months before you ever send out a sales email or before people even know about the product, right? And I highly recommend getting on Ramit Sethi's list at I Will Teach. He is the master of this. So let's talk about real quick how it goes. So about 2 months before he starts sales or any sort of product or anything like that, you're going to start having just his regular emails. It's just his regular weekly or biweekly emails that come out, and they're going to start asking questions, or they're going to start putting the seeds of some sort of question into your mind, right? Maybe it's something like, hey, I've been thinking a lot about this. Has anyone had a problem when they're negotiating their salary? Or have you ever been in a job interview where you just turned into a complete flop sweat? I'd like to hear about that, right? So you're not talking about a product. You're not going to sell anything. There's nothing here that is, hey, get your guard up because I'm going to sell you something. It's just a question, right? And it kind of goes on, and it's not every email, but every other email, he's just kind of bringing back that topic, right? So now you've started thinking about internally, what would it be like to negotiate a better salary? What would it be like to do X or to do Y or to kind of improve my life in this way? All right. So he's not selling you a product. He's starting a conversation, and that conversation is running in your mind over and over for about 2 months, right? Then when he starts the sale and he announces that initial product, you're going to be in a situation where you've been thinking about this product for 2 months, right? And you're going to say, man, I've been thinking about changing jobs, and here is some great information about how to do that, how to interview and increase my salary, or how to negotiate a better salary myself, right? So now I've had this problem in my mind for the last 2 months that I've been thinking about, and now here's an answer to it, right? So now he's starting the education of what it means to negotiate, what it means to get a better job, et cetera, right? And this is how you want to structure your launches, where you're not just coming out of the blue and saying, hey, I got a new product, buy my stuff. Mm-hmm. It's this gradual, called priming the pump, right? So you want to prime the pump and make sure that people are really thinking about and internalizing this problem over time. And it's not an instant thing. You can't have a one-time just, hey, here's a webinar, buy my stuff, right? And you can't even do it over a week. If you're selling a $500, $1,000 product, you're not going to be able to prime people enough in a week to get ready for it. The more groundwork you can do, the better your sales are going to be.
Absolutely. That aligns with my approach to sales as well. However, I might be really spoiled, or like myself and all my peers and everybody knows that every single message that goes out online is out there for a purpose. Mm-hmm. So that kind of thing, that somebody is tuning me up for something with questions, I'm instantly going to question, like, what do they have in mind?
Right.
Not like they're selling right now, but what they're going to sell in future.
Yeah.
Is it a good place for like radical transparency, saying like, I'm going to be doing something in future, but here's myself, you know, providing maximum educational free information for you?
So if you've only done sales emails up until now, and then you suddenly start this, there's going to be a lot of people who are kind of have their guard up. The whole point, and this is going to sound horrible, but the whole point of marketing is to get people to lower their guard, right? When you put up your guard, you're putting up things that say, I don't want to buy this. I'm going to be sold something, so I want to make sure that I'm not part of this, right? And the idea is through conversation to get them to lower those guards and to understand that this is not a sale. This is someone providing information, right? And at the end of the day, I think that most of the people selling products are not there to make a quick buck. I think that a lot, now not everyone, I know that there definitely are people there to make a quick buck, but there are, I think the majority of people really believe that they are helping people and they want to help people. And to me, that's the difference. So you were saying, you know, as marketers, we, when we see a question like that, yeah, our guards go straight up. But we're used to that.
Exactly.
We're used to that. And I think that A, most people are not. And B, I think that there are ways to do it. And it's hard. That's why copywriting is hard. But there are ways to do it that don't raise those shields as much, right? That you can have a natural conversation with that. So even something as simple as just having a quick email that says, hey, I saw that you had signed up for this assessment. How is that going? Are you feeling better now? And just have them respond to that, right? Just something to increase that engagement, to increase that openness, and anything you can do to lower those shields. And this, I think, is where, getting back to what we were talking about, the analytics really helps, because different people respond to things in different ways, and it's very difficult to tell who is responding to what in what way. So let's say that you have an email sequence. Let's say you're doing a launch. Half the people get sent this a quick email that just says, hey, how's it going? Let me know. Respond to this email. Just let me know. I'd love to talk about it. And half of them don't. Has that moved the needle as far as people opening it or responding to later emails? That's where this optimization analytics, where something like Segmetrics, or if you want to do it by hand in your CRM, really helps, which is, what are the touch points during your funnel or during your sales funnel that get people more engaged and turn people into more revenue? That's, at the end of the day, that's the goal.
Absolutely. Since we're talking about analytics, give our listeners some insight. I know open rates and click rates, they differ dramatically from list to list, depends on the list freshness, depends on the industry, on the origin of the emails, etc. But what's your advice on, you know, judging about the those numbers that you see? So let's say you get 30% open rate and like 3% click rate. Is that good? Is that bad? How do you compare that to others, maybe?
Right. It's, and like you said, it's completely dependent on the industry, on where the leads came from, if they're fresh leads from like a Facebook ad or if they've been on your list forever. What I generally see is you want around a, and let's look at cold leads, because people who are warm, it's going to be much more all over the spectrum. I have clients with warm leads that have a 60 to 80% open rate, which is insanity, But so let's focus on cold leads. Generally, you want to be seeing around 20 to 30% open rates on cold leads. That's going to be your average. You probably want to see around a 5% purchase rate on a cold funnel. That's kind of what you want to be seeing there. One thing that's interesting is that everyone knows about the click open rate and click rate. I'm not sure, talking to a lot of people, if they understand what they mean, right? From a philosophical level, which is that, I mean, honestly, so marketing I call it is applied psychology, right? So understanding how people act and then being able to apply that in a way that makes them do what you want. Again, sounds horrible, but really at the end of the day, that's what marketing is. And so let's look at both of those. So an open rate is how enticing your subject line is. That is literally all it is. It is how much do they trust the sender and how much have they made, how interesting do they find the potential information that's in there? Because at the point where they've clicked on this, they have no idea what's in this email, right? At the point when they open the email, they have no idea what's inside. All they know is the sender and the subject line and maybe that first little snippet, right? So if you have bad open rates, you should not look at the body of your emails. That's step two. First, you need to look at your subject lines. What can you change about the subject line or the sender or that first little snippet that entices people to open? And that is your top of the funnel there. Now, that click rate is the second step, which is how compelling is the copy, that body copy of your email, right? And that's two things. That's one, what is the offer? Two, do you even have a link to click? And then three, does the body copy match the subject line? And that's, I think, very important. You know, they always talk about when you're doing Facebook ads, make sure that the title of the landing page matches the title of the ad, because people want, when they click on something, when they open something, they're expecting to get the information that's on that open line. So if the open line says, hey, look inside for your free $50 gift certificate, and then you talk about a sale, people are going to feel betrayed, right? And your click rate is going to go down because they're not getting what they expected, right? So, but, and this is kind of a long way of me saying, I think it's important to understand that if your open rate is low, you need to make sure that you are looking at the subject line. And if your click rate is low, you need to make sure that you have a compelling story in your email, and B, that your email is related, that content is related to the subject line, right? And so that you have a cohesive story as you're going through. And this is going back a little bit to what we were talking about with the launch plan and starting that 2 months ahead. These are not things that you can just say, oh, I'm sending out an email about A, then B, then C, then D, then back to A, and then here's a sales email, right? You want to have, just like you're writing a book, you want to have a cohesive narrative through all the emails that you're sending. So people don't feel like this is a one-off email that they can ignore. They want to feel that, hey, I'm learning about something. I really want to read this next email. And I think that's where a lot of people have dropped off and had a lot of problems, where I'm on so many email lists, it's not even funny. And I track them all, and I read them back. I actually categorize them all. I leave notes. But what I see in a lot of these email lists is that people have one email about something, and then suddenly I'll get an email the next day about something completely different. And it feels like it's the shotgun approach of, hey, check out all this stuff. And especially for a launch is a cohesive story that ends with someone fulfilling their dream by buying your product. And you want to have, you know, it's that whole pain dream fix that we talk about. You want to have a cohesive narrative, not just in a sales page or in an email. You want to have a cohesive building narrative through the entire conversation. And that conversation is that entire 2 to 3 month launch that starts with the simple question that goes into the talking about X, and then culminates in a webinar that you're live and you're answering questions and you're getting feedback with people, and then finishes with the sale.
However, one of my favorite improvements that you can do to any of your marketing emails is to start providing more context, because of course you're talking to people who are there being nurtured long term. However, there's always people who just joined, and there are always people who have been ignoring your emails but suddenly decided to open one of them. So it's both trying to keep it consistent, but at the same time providing the sense of context in the beginning of each email like it would be a single pamphlet.
Yes, exactly. And this is interesting, because this is where you can go into a little bit more advanced things with a launch strategy. And so, you know, they always say sales is the right product to the right person at the right time, right? Mm-hmm. And some people just are not ready for that. Or maybe someone comes into the list, like you said, halfway through, or maybe someone hasn't opened up 4 emails. What you can do is segment those people out. So let's say every week or every 4 emails or something, take everyone who has not gotten any of those emails and run them through a smaller warming campaign. Just something small that catches them up. Maybe if they haven't opened any emails, but they've been getting them, you say, hey, I see that you haven't opened up any of these. Are you interested? Like, I'm talking about this right now. Get them, try to re-engage, right? And this is something you can do. And this is why this is important. you can do this during a launch because you're watching in real time, and you have to keep the analytics. I always bring it back to analytics because that's my bag, but you got to keep watching and saying, okay, people are not responding to this email. People are not responding to two emails. How can I bring them back and try something else to get them re-engaged? It's all about this engagement, right? And then taking all that information and doing things like you're saying, like, okay, these people are coming in the middle. Let's send them this two email warmer sequence. And then after they're done with that, we push them back into the live funnel.
Yes, absolutely. It's great advice because that distinction between people who just onboarded and those who have been with you for a while, if you can make your tool do that for you, maybe prevent those newcomers from receiving any of the sales or ongoing emails until they finish that warm-up sequence that you're talking about. If you can just do that little thing, you're going to dramatically improve the experience of the person who joins the list because they're going to be warmed up, like you said, and then you can keep selling to them with the main sequence, right?
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why you need to make sure that your launch is not going out to everyone on your list. And this is something that people think of is that, oh, every broadcast I'm putting out for this launch should just go to everyone. And that's not true. At the beginning of your launch, you should tag everyone that says, okay, they're going to be in this launch. You only are sending people with that tag these launch emails. And the reason is because, just like you said, if someone opts in new, they need to go through a two or three email sequence, get warmed up, and then they get that tag so they can join everyone else in the launch.
I'm afraid we don't have like 3 hours to talk about everything in detail, but it would be great to so that our listeners have an idea how a classic launch, like classic final week before launch goes. Like, what is that? Like, for example, a week before or the launch day, the day before the launch day, like those, say, 7 days where the book like is out and things like that. What's the general structure?
Yeah, so the common one, and definitely everyone look this up because it is kind of the gold standard, is Frank Kern's product launch formula. It's called a PLF. And that's kind of the gold standard. It's a very good base to start your launch strategy from once you start those sales. Definitely, it's definitely a base. You have to jump off. You have to optimize and change things in it because everyone's doing it. But it is a good first step. So let's walk through that real quick. So what it generally is you have a 2 week sales cycle. So this is once you have said, hey, this is a product that I'm going to launch. You essentially have a week of three videos that you're going to send people. Right. So each day they're going to get an email with, hey, I'm talking about negotiation. This is great. This is awesome. I have an interview with such and such expert. Check it out here. They click on it. They go to a page. They get that video with the link. They enjoy it. All right. Next day or the second email, same thing. Hey, hope you enjoyed that last email. Wasn't it great? Here's another interview. Here's where I'm going to talk about this new topic, because this is super important. We do the same thing. Same thing on the third day, all right? And then as we're doing this, we start saying, by the way, I'm going to have a live webinar next Wednesday where I'm going to talk through all this and answer all your questions live on the call. Register for this webinar. So at this point, we've had three educational emails plus videos. We're going to send them one more on Monday, but we're gearing them up to get on this webinar for on that Wednesday. All right. So we're going to have that webinar. 2 p.m. Pacific is a really good time, U.S. time Pacific, because it helps people who are on Pacific time and helps people who are getting off of work on the Eastern time. Play around with the timing. But anyways, do a live webinar. And at the end of that webinar, at the end of the Q&A, you're going to sell the product. Right? You're going to say, and I'm opening this product up. I'm here for the next 15 minutes to answer Q&A, et cetera, et cetera. And go through that process, all right? The cart opens on that Wednesday. I would give them an early bird special, so there's either a discount or some sort of bonus that they get for being on the webinar and going live to the webinar. The next day, they don't get the bonus anymore, but you have the cart still open. That's Thursday. Friday, the cart is going to close at midnight, and you make sure that they know that, hey, you only have 5 hours left. You're sending out emails this entire time. Make sure that they're going to purchase this product. Then on the next Monday, you are going to send out an email that says, hey, this is great. I've had such a great response. We got an email over the weekend. Lots of people are saying that they weren't able to get it by the time the cart closed. I'm opening this up for 24 hours at the same price. So that's called a last chance offer. So that Monday, you're going to open it up for one more. All right. That is your basic formula. Now, here's two things that you really want to have in addition to this. One is, after they purchase, you want to have some sort of product that you can upsell them to, right? So it's called a one-click upsell. After they purchase, you want to go in and say, hey, thanks for buying X. I think you would really enjoy Y. A lot of times this is like the upgraded version of the X product. So you can say, hey, a lot of people are saying that these one-on-one meetings with me are great. I would really recommend getting this extra 90-minute session with me for $500, right, or whatever it is. And so we add in extra revenue on top of that. The last one is that for people who haven't bought anything through this whole funnel, about a week or so later, you're going to give them a downsell. So this is something that for people who maybe were price sensitive, that was too expensive, or who maybe needed something else or weren't at the level they needed to be. So you can give them something to purchase at their price point, at their expertise level, still finding that right time, right person, right product.
I'm loving this approach with upsells and downsells. You know, Cart Hook is one of my best all-time clients, but I've never even thought to apply upsells and downsells to any of my info products. I have no idea why, but
what?
It sounds like a wonderful place to do that.
Jane,
seriously,
Jane.
It's just not in the books. You know, there is Nathan Berry's like blueprint, Brandon Dunn's blueprint, and they never really do upsells and downsells for some reason. But it's like e-commerce gold standard,
oh,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Oh gosh, yes. And one of the crazy thing, a lot of upsell and downsells, it's just like printing free money. That and tiered pricing is honestly the two strategies that you really have to use for your marketing. One of the most interesting things I've ever seen, though, with upsells is that for one client, we were selling a $500 product, and we tried selling a upsell that was more expensive. So usually an upsell is something that's like a tenth the price or maybe half the price. We sold a $2,000 product on a $500 product. And we're like, this is never going to work. This is never, revenue-wise, it just kicked the butt of a standard upsell because it's worth so much more. Yeah, our conversion rate wasn't great. It was only, I think, like 5 or 10%. But 5 or 10% at 10x the price is a huge improvement.
Let's not start on price tiers.
Honestly, I'm kind of sad that there's only 30 minutes. I could talk about this stuff for, honestly, hours.
All right. I have a blog post about pricing tiers, which breaks down two pricing strategies. So one is a classic three tier, which has like 1x, 2x, and 5x. And another is the approach with just two tiers that have very little difference between each other. And there is a lot. I'm just going to link to that because it's a lot of discussion. So just to recap, the important part of the launch is announcing something that's a limited time offer, be it either a launch discount if the product remains up, or the product closes entirely.
Correct.
After the launch ends.
Correct.
Right?
Or some sort of different people like different things. So if maybe it's a bonus that you get with it, something that makes a scarcity thing worth it.
I don't know. What shall we end the episode with, really? I wish we could have more time, but what's a great reading place to learn more about launch structure and how you can do that for your product?
So there's a ton. Neil Patel's blog, I think, is really good about marketing and launch structures overall. The Segmetrics blog at segmetrics.io, we talk a lot about launch strategies, marketing strategies, tiered pricing, upsells, downsells, all that fun stuff, as well as how do you optimize it, and then how do you measure it? Because without measuring it, you're really not going to know if things are doing better or worse. You just know what they are.
Here's one question I wanted to include, and let's do that. Can you give us a definition of an evergreen launch? So what is that?
I'm glad you asked, because this is actually something I wanted to mention and hoping we have time for. So an evergreen launch is very similar to a regular launch, except it's not time-based. Everyone goes in at a different time. So if I opt in for this PDF, I get put into this evergreen launch, and I go down that same funnel as if it was a regular launch, except that I'm the only person going down that funnel, right? It's keyed to my timing. And one of the things I love about, and I fully believe that evergreen funnels and evergreen launches are the way to build a sustainable business, because launches, one-time launches, are very tough. But one of the awesome things you can do is take that one-time launch and evergreen it. So take all those emails, take all the tags, take everything you did, and then turn it into an evergreen launch that just goes the exact same way. And when it's evergreened, you get the benefit of looking at people over time and seeing, oh, this email is performing much worse over time than it did in the initial launch, and we're able to tweak, right? You can go back and fix something that's evergreen, where a launch, one time and it's done. You send out that email, it's gone. You're never sending out another version of that email. But with evergreen, you're able to optimize, and you're able to tweak and improve that funnel as people keep going through it, and as you see what touch points in that funnel make people more likely to buy.
I have one more question. Tell us why creators should be not afraid to give away too much samples of their product.
Oh, this is the biggest thing that people do. You should give out as much as you possibly can for free.
Right.
You and I have a mutual friend, Patrick McKenzie, and my favorite story about this is he famously put out everything he ever thought and everything he ever did on his blog for free. And he worked on conversion rate optimization for SaaS's and enterprise and stuff. And he had this client once that called him in and he said, "We really want to work with you to improve our conversion rate." And he's like, and they said, "We've read every single blog article. Our team has gone through every single post you've ever made. We've combed your Twitter and your Hacker News, everything. We know everything that you've ever written." And Patrick said, "Well, if you know all that, then there's really no reason to hire me. I'm just going to do what I wrote in all these articles." And they're like, "Yes, but we want you to do it for us." And that is the difference. It doesn't matter how much free stuff you give out, how much information that you have spread out among hundreds of thousands of articles. No one is going to connect the threads and take the time to put them all together. It's why, as a slight tangent, it's why Wirecutter is such a great site. So Wirecutter, for any product, it just tells you the best one you should buy. Toaster oven, this is what you should buy. Because there's thousands of toaster ovens out there. And to do the research and to connect all the threads and to make a decision is so tough. I just want someone to give me the answer. I want someone I trust to tell me what is the best thing that we should do. I had this conversation with Josh Kaufman, who similarly is really good at researching stuff. He's really good at understanding stuff. And when I was looking at life insurance or business insurance or any of this stuff, I was talking with my friend and he's like, "Yeah, I just follow whatever Josh says. Like, whatever Josh is doing, that's what we're doing." And it's true, because I could spend all that time. I could connect all the dots for all your free information that you've put out on your blogs and your PDFs and everything over time. Or I can just buy a $500, $1,000 product that I know is going to lead me exactly through the content I need and take me to where I want to go if I put in the time. And that's why you should never be worried about giving out too much for free. Now, I will caveat that with one thing. You should not, because people like to bundle extra stuff into their sales products, do not bundle 800 products together into a single sale just because you think it's going to increase conversion, because it cheapens the value of your products. When you sell a product, sell that product. Don't bundle in like, "I have product A and B and C and get my lifetime subscription to D for free when you buy this." Don't do that. Let the quality of your products stand on their own. Give out your best content for free and then charge people for that collection and that path through the product.
That's gold advice. Thank you so much. So to recap, nobody's going to read all of your content. And even if you feel like you're repeating yourself between products or between your blog posts, not too many people or close to none are going to notice that.
Right.
And the second part is that sometimes people would pay for something that's smaller in size, even that's not even custom solution, but for yourself, selecting the most practical and pinpoint information in a small kind of volume.
Exactly. So the two types of people who are going to read all your content are the people who are never going to pay you a penny anyways, and they want to get it for free, or the people who believe in you so much that they want to devour everything that you've ever written. And the first one is never going to pay you a penny anyways. The second one is going to pay you no matter what, because they believe you and they trust you.
Well, Keith, so much, thank you so much for sharing your advice today. It's absolutely priceless. I hope our listeners can now launch their own products better.
Yeah, it was great talking to you. I love talking about this stuff.
What is the best place for people to follow you online and where they can find Segmetrics?
Yeah, so I can be found at developyourmarketing.com. And then Segmetrics is at segmetrics.io. And then for everyone on this podcast, we put together a 15% off coupon forever for Segmetrics at segmetrics.io/loves/UIbreakfast. So I'm sure that link will be in the show notes.
Awesome. We love you too. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you, Keith, once again, and have a great day.
You too. Thanks, Jane.